Netradioen Flygtning og Fred bringer her en fuld optagelse af Europaparlamentskomiteen for borgerrettigheder og retlige og indre anliggenders høring af den danske udlændingeminister Mattias Tesfaye omkring Danmarks flygtningepolitiks lovlighed med hensyn til dels udlicitering af asylbehandling til tredje lande og dels fratagelse af syriske flygtningens opholdstilladelser. Høringen af Mattias Tesfaye fandt sted den 13. januar 2022.
Exchange of views with Minister for Immigration and Integration, Minister Tesfaye. Welcome, Minister. As you will know, the intention today is to have an exchange of views, to have a round of questions and answers emerging from the decisions taken by the Danish authorities to not renew the asylum residence permits to people who had already been granted asylum status. So this and a decision relating to pending applications as well. So, Minister, I would like to give you an opportunity to make an opening statement first of all. Please take up no more than 10 minutes for that, and then we will hear questions from the political groups. We will have a question and answer around, and we'll try to keep it agile and dynamic, so we'll have a lively exchange. Minister, thank you very much for being here with us today. You have the floor.
Thank you, and thanks for the invitation. I've been in Brussels before, but to be honest, I actually never been in the Parliament before, so this is my first day in the European Parliament. And also because of that, I would like to say thank you for the invitation. And let me first express my heartfelt condolences on the loss of David Sassoli. My sympathy is with his family, friends and close ones. And I would like to thank the LIBE committee and its members for the invitation to come here and give a presentation on the Danish government's proposal on transferring spontaneous asylum seekers to a partner country outside the European Union and the Danish asylum practices regarding Syrians. I appreciate your interest in Danish asylum and in migration policy, and I look forward to a fruitful debate with all of you. Prior to the meeting, I have answered a number of written questions from the committee, which I gather you have all received. I'll start with a brief presentation of the Danish government's vision of a new asylum system, followed by a brief presentation of the status of the Danish policy regarding Syrian refugees. According to the UNHCR, more than 22,000 refugees and migrants have drowned or disappeared in the Mediterranean since 2014. Sunk to the bottom of the ocean in overcrowded rubber boats, others have been suffocated by lack of oxygen in the back of a trunk, just as many are subjected to violence, rape or kidnapping on the journey to Europe. According to Europol, 9 out of 10 of the migrants who arrive in the Union irregularly come via human traffickers. Around half of those who reach the Union and apply for asylum do not have a need for protection, and we spend enormous resources on sending them home again. At the same time, we can hear from the UNHCR, the International Committee of the Red Cross and other organizations that they lack money to help refugees in the regions of origin. All while human smugglers earn fortunes and refugees in the regions of origin are in need of both immediate help and prospects of a better future. The most vulnerable are merely left behind. And lately, we've seen horrific examples of migrants being used as a means of political blackmail on the EU's eastern borders, and seen migrants who lose their lives on the way across the English Channel. All examples that, in our view, point in one direction, that of a failed asylum system. An asylum system should be about protecting the world's most vulnerable people from war and from persecution. I think most of us can quickly agree on that. But unfortunately, the reality is obviously quite different. The Danish government wishes to turn the tables around to create a new, more fair and more humane asylum system where we can meet two crucial responsibilities that we have as prosperous and as democratic societies. Firstly, it is to secure the social cohesion and the security of our own societies. And secondly, to secure that we uphold our fair share of responsibility towards helping those in need of protection. The Danish vision has a holistic approach and wishes to address several objectives at the same time. To ensure that it is the European Union that has control over who enters our territory and not the human smugglers, to combat the root causes of irregular migration in countries of origin, to break the incentives that make refugee and irregular migrants risk their lives on trying to reach our shores, to provide better protection and livelihood for refugees in regions of origin, and to create an orderly, legal and humane pathway to protection in the European Union via the UN quota system for resettlement. We believe that in order to remove the incentives for irregular migration and pave way for a more democratic and orderly system, asylum processing needs to be moved outside of the European Union. And that's why the Danish government has proposed a mechanism whereby spontaneous asylum seekers from Denmark would be transferred to asylum application processing and subsequent protection to a partner country outside the Schengen area. And it is important for me to underline a few points regarding the Danish proposal. One is, it does not entail an abolition of the right to seek asylum in Denmark, but a change in where the cases are processed and where the protection is given. Two, we are not against granting protection for those in need. It just has to happen through legal pathways, including resettlement via the UN quota system. And lastly, three, any bilateral agreement between Denmark and a potential partner country will be based on an equal partnership and mutual interests and will not put extra burdens on the partner country. Furthermore, the Danish proposal of the new asylum system should not be seen as an opposition to the pact proposed by the Commission. On the contrary, Denmark remains fully committed to the European Union discussions on the pact. The majority of the elements of the Danish vision are also fully in line with the pact proposal, for example, when it comes to focus on strengthening the external border or strengthening the asylum and migration authorities in countries of origin, or when it comes to increasing support in regions of origin to help those in need and address root causes of irregular migration. However, Denmark believes that it is necessary to do more to break the negative incentive structure and counter the business model of the human smugglers. That's why Denmark has put forward this proposal, to try to show a concrete way forward. Denmark is happy and most willing to engage in frank and open dialogue on this and other proposals that can help address these challenges. Last summer, on June the 3rd, the Danish Parliament adopted the Danish law that introduces the legal basis for transferring asylum seekers for asylum application processing and subsequent protection in third countries in compliance with Denmark's international obligations. An agreement will be subject to parliamentary review before entering into effect. I'll not go into detail about the legislation, but highlight some key points. The LIBE committee is, of course, welcome to ask follow-up questions. The key elements of the law is that the scheme is limited to third country nationals and stateless persons seeking asylum in Denmark. There are exemptions where an asylum seeker will not be transferred. For example, cases where a transfer is not possible due to Denmark's international obligations. All decisions of transfer must be made on a case-by-case basis. Any case assessment is too tired and the asylum seeker has the right to remain in Denmark during the processing. It's also stated in the legislation that any potential agreement with a partner country must contain sufficient safeguards to ensure full compliance with our international and European law. The scheme is moreover conditioned by the establishment of an independent monitoring mechanism with the purpose of ensuring compliance with the guarantees in the agreement. Now let me turn to the questions of the Danish asylum practices regarding Syrians. The Danish government is pursuing an immigration policy without compromising our obligations to help people who have fled their country and need protection. We provide protection to those in need, but we also believe that when the conditions in the home country have improved, former refugees should return to their home country and re-establish a life there. Asylum is temporary. That applies to all refugees, including persons from Syria. This is a very essential part of the Danish refugee system and has been so for many years. That said, I'm well aware that the Danish approach concerning some of the refugees from Syria has caused international attention. However, from a legal point of view, it should be noted that in Denmark there are three different kinds of asylum residence permits. Firstly, what we call convention status for refugees within the scope of the 51 Refugee Convention, the Geneva Convention. Secondly, what we call protection status for refugees who because of specific and individual factors will be exposed to a risk of the death penalty or of being subjected to torture or inhumane or degrading treatment or punishment. That's according to the European Convention on Human Rights, Article 3. And lastly, temporary protection status for refugees who face such treatment contrary to Article 3 in the European Convention on Human Rights because of an extremely severe general situation in their home country with widespread arbitrary acts of violence targeted at civilians. It's important to underline that the specific reassessment of asylum residence permits for refugees from Syria that we are exchanging views on today only apply to persons from Damascus and Rift Damascus with temporary resident permits granted on the grounds of general conditions and not on individual. Persons from Syria with a residence permit granted on individual grounds, for example, persons in conflict with the Syrian authorities due to fleeing compulsory military service, which is therefore within the scope of the Refugee Convention, are not affected. In Denmark, all asylum cases are assessed by the Danish Immigration Service in first instance and the Independent Danish Refugee Appeals Board in the second and final instance. The above-mentioned reassessment of the residence permits of persons from Damascus and Rif Damascus is based on a conclusion from the Refugee Appeals Board concerning the general security situation in those areas. Based on available background information, the Refugee Appeals Board finds that the situation in Damascus and Rif Damascus has changed to such an effect that people do not risk ill treatment, contrary to Article 3 of the European Convention on Human Rights, solely by being present in those areas. The board finds that the situation in Damascus and Rif Damascus is still severe, fragile and unpredictable, but the board's conclusion is that the situation has improved and the board does not consider the changes to be of a completely temporary nature. The board's assessment is in full accordance with the Danish Aliens Act, which reflects the aforementioned criteria that a residence permit granted on grounds of the general conditions can be revoked or denied extended if the situation in the area has improved. This is the case even though the situation is still severe, fragile and unpredictable as long as the changes are not of completely temporary nature. In other words, for such refugees with a resident permit that are not granted on individual grounds but on grounds of the general conditions, it's not required that the changes should be of a fundamental, stable and durable character as required in the 51 Refugee Convention. The Danish Aliens Act and the board's assessment of the cases are in accordance with Denmark's international obligations, including the Refugee Convention and Article 3 of the European Convention of Human Rights and the case law of the European Court. The Immigration Service and the Refugee Appeals Board thoroughly review every case in order to ensure that a person with a need for protection retains his or her residence permit. The decisions are considered on a case-by-case basis in accordance with our law and as well as Denmark's international obligations. This means that individuals who, because of specific and individual factors, face persecution within the scope of the Geneva Convention or the European Convention on Human Rights will obtain either convention status or protection status. The Danish authorities also consider whether there's a family or private life protected by the European Convention on Human Rights, Article 8. If so, the resident permits will, of course, not be revoked. The board has made the assessment of the situation in Syria based on a wide collection.
Perdone, ministro, tiene que ir terminando.
I'm sorry, Minister, but could you close, please?
Based on a wide, the board has made the assessment of the situation in Syria based on a wide collection of reports regarding Syria from various sources, including reports from the Danish Immigration Service, the authorities in Sweden, and the authorities in Great Britain, European Asylum Support Office, and different NGOs. The board's collection of reports regarding the situation in Syria is regularly updated. The Danish government is complying with an arm's length principle, meaning, for example, that the decisions in asylum cases are made independently of the political process. This means that neither the government nor I have influence on the assessment and the outcome of the cases. Furthermore, the Refugee Appeals Board is an independent quasi-judicial body, and the members of the board may not accept or seek directions from anyone, including me. With regard to forced returns to Syria, there are currently exceptional circumstances. For foreign policy reasons, Denmark does not carry out forced returns to Syria. We, together with our closest allies, refrain from actions that could be viewed as normalizing relations with the Syrian regime. Denmark is in no way considering an agreement with the regime on the issue of forced returns. The Danish authorities will continue to assist persons in Denmark with arranging their voluntarily return to Syria and other and offer financial assistance in case of such return. Thank you. Thank you.
Ha sido un minuto largo.
That was quite a long minute. Well, let us now give the floor to the groups. First of all, for the EPP, Madame Dupont, who's in the room, you have the floor. Please be as concise as possible and no more than 2 minutes.
Chair, and I will try to be as brief as possible. Thanks, dear Minister, for joining us here today. And let me be open with you. I would like to share some mixed feelings, as I would say, as regards your proposal. The idea in your proposal had been discussed before, and while we all long for, let's say, a new momentum in the debate on asylum and migration policy, there's also a mixed perception in the public opinion. So some have publicly expressed great interest in the Danish model. Some have raised concerns for good reasons. The Commission is also still in the process of analysing the law. And as you're well aware, or hopefully well aware, we are here in this House, we as EPP are working strongly on a European approach to ensure strong borders, a fair and swift asylum procedures, efficient and safe returns of those who are not eligible for protection, and a sustainable system to better handle upcoming crises. So a lot of things that you also touched upon in your opening remarks, also the question of fighting criminal networks and smugglers in this regard. So the first question probably would be, how do you estimate the effects of those fighting against criminal networks? The second question, irrespective of the models you also touched upon in your preparation notes, how do you want to ensure the control of the adherence to the law? Third question, does the model also entail the possibility to apply in the third country already for asylum before fleeing the country? A fourth question, with which, and I think probably the most important question in this regard, with which third country do you have already talks about it? Do you already cooperate? If you could give us a bit more insight on the possible content of these talks, this would be also very enlightening in this debate. Thanks a lot.
Bien, ministro, tres preguntas.
Thank you, Minister. There's three questions for you. You have the floor.
Thanks, Mrs. Dupont, for the questions from the EPP. And I'm glad that you are open about the mixed feelings in the group. And I completely understand the discussions I can hear that you are having. And people that have followed the European debate on migration the last couple of decades may have noticed that this is not a Danish idea. It's not a social democratic idea. It's not my idea. It's been discussed in Europe for decades. We are trying to implement it in reality, and we are working very hard to establish such a transfer mechanism, because we honestly think we could be, we would be able to help more refugees, to fight human smuggling, and to establish a migration policy where the European society, the Danish society, are better able to control and to manage migration. If it would only be Denmark that to establish such a mechanism, it wouldn't affect human smuggling and the criminal networks, because we are just a tiny country in Europe. So we are hoping to establish a mechanism that can inspire other European countries, because if more countries do like us, or the whole of Europe, then there wouldn't be a criminal industry to smuggle human beings on the rubber boats across the Mediterranean Sea. So we are trying to establish a mechanism that could work as an example. And because of that, it's extremely important for us to uphold all of our international obligations. If we're not doing that, it couldn't be used as an example. And we are also trying to establish a partnership with a country that is also in that country's interest. So we are saying yes to quota refugees. It could be from that country. It could be student visas from that country. It could be strengthening our diplomatic representation in that country. It could be strengthening our investments, green investments in that country. So we have a lot of ideas on how to establish such a partnership with a country. And it's not just about Denmark paying a poor country and then turning our backs to migration problems. It is to establish a real partnership. One of the absolutely most crucial thing is to make 100% sure that people that are a part of such a transfer mechanism, an asylum seeker that has applied for asylum on Danish soil, is not being is granted all of their rights. And this means that we also have to establish an independent monitoring mechanism to make sure that people are granted a lawyer, interpretation, housing, appeal instances, everything. I can't mention names on the countries that we are discussing with, but I can assure that we are in dialogue with a handful of countries outside of the European Union, and our talks is moving forward, and I'm hoping to strike such a deal. Yes, thank you.
Bien, por el grupo San...
Thank you for S&D. Cyrus Hengera has the floor.
Thank you, Chair, and I welcome you, Minister, to the European Parliament. It is definitely not a socialist and a democrat idea that you have just mentioned. But I would like to focus on the Syria question myself, and I leave maybe the other topics to my colleagues as well. Last year marked a decade of conflict in Syria, categorized by civil unrest, bombings, and death. What started as an anti-government crackdown has gone into war. 11 years on, there are 5.7 million Syrians who have fled the country, with 1.5 million of them found in neighboring Lebanon. And yet, Denmark wants to send human beings back to Syria. For me, this is perplexing, as it was Denmark's own foreign affairs minister himself who stated that as we enter a decade of conflict in Syria, and I quote, "the crimes of the Syrian regime continue." I believe, Minister, this is the reason why your diplomatic mission in Damascus has not been reinstated, for instance. Yet, you want to send a number of human beings back to Damascus. Now let's put aside the fact that 11 of 12 of the government's experts utilized in the Danish government's report, which led to this belief, have issued statements distancing themselves from the government's conclusions. Let's even put aside the Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch reports, which documented serious cases of human rights abuses and torture experienced by persons returned to Syria. The fact remains that Denmark, as you said, does not have a cooperation agreement with the Assad regime. So my question is, how are Syrians meant to be readmitted into a country which has not agreed to accept them back? Where will they go? By revoking people's residence permits without a readmission agreement with Syria, all the Danish government is doing is placing people in legal limbo and encouraging them to go to other member states of the European Union. An investigation published yesterday by Lighthouse Reports, also seen by Der Spiegel, the EU Observer, and others, finds that while Syrians have indeed left Denmark, they have not returned to Syria. Instead, they are fleeing to the Netherlands, to Sweden, Germany, and Belgium, among others. So, in a sense, all your policy seems to be doing is encouraging secondary movement to other European countries and giving those escaping persecution and war in Syria a message that they are simply not welcome in Denmark. I would like to hear your views on this. Thank you.
Minister, that's a very specific question, and we'd like a very, very specific reply, not a philosophical reply, a specific one, please.
Let me start by saying that our proposal is presented by the Social Democratic Party in Denmark and is because of that a social democratic idea in Denmark. And we have formulated our migration policy in a way where we try to make sure that the Danish welfare state is able to integrate the people that are migrating to Denmark. And it's very important for us to maintain the social cohesion in our society. And because of that, we have to make sure that migration is under control. We are in favor of migration. We are writing resident permits to thousands and thousands of people each year that come to Denmark to work, to study, as family reunified. We have absolutely no problem with that kind of migration. But the asylum system is broke, in our point of view, and that's why we have presented this idea. And I agree with the Danish foreign minister that the crime of the Syrian regimes continue. But in Denmark and in internationally, when you are to assess whether a person is in need of protection, that's not a judgment of the government in that country. That is a case-by-case judgment on whether that concrete person is in any need of protection. The vast, vast majority of Syrians in Denmark is still in need of protection, and it's because of that getting their residence permits prolonged. But there has been a small amount of people coming from Damascus and the Rif Damascus area where the independent quasi-judicial refugee appeals board have decided that these persons are not in any need of protection. And that's how an asylum system is working. Some is getting residence permits and asylum, and some is not getting. And it doesn't matter whether they're from Syria, Afghanistan, Ukraine, Egypt, or Eritrea. Every case is processed individually.
Pues gracias.
Thank you. Let's now give the floor to Madam Sophie Tavel for Renew Europe.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Minister, for coming here. We had extended an invitation to you last year, April, so we're delighted to have you here. And actually, the only question burning in my mind is how you can sleep at night. Because quite frankly, all the talk about international obligations, Geneva Conventions, human rights, it sounds a bit like, you know, the wonderful new clothes of the emperor to me, because in reality, the emperor is naked. And if you say these ideas have been discussed in Europe for decades, I quote, sure, but usually not by the mainstream parties, because they still adhere to European values. The questions on Syria have already been asked by my colleague. I haven't heard actually why you think that you cannot do business with the Syrian government. You say it's not safe, but some people can be sent back. Okay, but let's assess the success of your policies against your stated objectives. First, you said we want a more fair and a more humane system. I would like to know if the people concerned, so that's the refugees, if they consider that your policy is more fair and more humane. Then another objective was to secure our own society. Well, then I would first like to understand what this massive threat was to the Danish society, one of the most prosperous, developed and safest countries in the world. And if that threat has now been averted by this new policy, I would also like to know which results exactly this policy has had in the fight against smuggling of human beings. And I would also like to hear a little bit more about your success rates in establishing real partnerships, as you said, with third countries like Rwanda. Another question is, how do you expect people to actually integrate into Danish society if the sword of Damocles is hanging over their head every day? If they know that, you know, one day they may be taken in and the next day they're booted out and they're sent back to Syria. How do you expect them to invest in their life in Denmark? So don't you make it effectively impossible for them to integrate? If the objective of this policy is to have a deterrent effect and make Denmark look inhospitable, well, it certainly worked, certainly amongst Europeans, because we think it's inhospitable. And isn't the truth here, isn't the real truth, that this is not a social democratic idea or a Danish idea, but isn't the truth that you're trying to cater to the far right that's breathing down your neck? And you're doing things which are actually not in line with all the nice talk. Yes, I'm coming to a conclusion, Madam Chair. But I think this is a very important topic, because you may not be bound by the immigration chapters of the European treaties, but you're bound by European values. You have signed up to the European treaties. You're a member of the European Union. And these policies are not in line with European values. Thank you.
Minister, there are various questions that you would need to reply to.
Thank you both for the comments and for the questions from Renew Europe. And let me start by saying that there's absolutely nothing in the Danish policy that is opposing the Lisbon Treaty or the international obligation that Denmark has signed. And we are proud of our society. It's a welfare society with quite high taxes, but also free education, free healthcare, quite high social benefits, and a good integration scheme for people coming to Denmark. But this society, it also needs some kind of social cohesion. And that means that we can't handle too high integration problems. And we have to insist on that people that are coming to Denmark is contributing to our society and becoming a part of the Danish society and accepting our values. And right now, actually, it's going in the right direction. Crime rates amongst migrants are going down quite fast. Employment rates are going up. It's going quite good in Denmark. We have fewer residential areas with serious social problems. Kids born in migrants' families are doing better and better in Denmark. But this is working because we have migration under control. If we just said yes to every person that wanted to come to Denmark, then we would have huge social problems, huge integration problems. That's why this is social democratic policy, and we are proud of that policy, and that it's a broad majority of the Danish parliament that are supporting that policy. We are not forcing anyone to go back to Syria, because that would... In that case, we would need an agreement with the Syrian government, and we are not recognizing the regime in Damascus. But there's a lot of Syrians in Denmark that are traveling voluntarily back with money from the Danish state, and I think that is absolutely okay. The better integration statistics in Denmark is including the Syrians in Denmark that are doing quite good. So that's just a comment. The vast majority of Syrians are still living in Denmark. They've been living here since 2015, 16, 17. They're doing quite good. We have high unemployment rates amongst women, but still in a historical view, it's doing better than with refugees coming to Denmark earlier. Yes.
Madam Chair, just for the record, I note that the Minister,
Señora
although he has
Invelt,
spoken, he
no
has
tiene
not
usted
responded.
La palabra.
Madam, you do not have the floor.
Los demás no,
others also have a right to speak.
I'm just
palabra.
Noting that.
Vamos a ver.
Ms. Intveld, it's not the first time. Please bear in mind, others also have a right to speak. We cannot throw out the rule book. The same rules that allowed you to take the floor as... coordinator should also allow others to take the floor.
please respect the rules. However much you wish to come back in, we have rules that allow all Libya members to speak, and we will go through all the speakers in the established order and hear the answers from the Danish minister. Please, let me remind you one last time to not do this again. Ms. Strick has the floor on behalf of the Greens. And you can, of course, tag on to the earlier questions to try and elicit answers from the minister.
Presenting your policies. We know that the situation in Syria is still very, very unsafe. There's no perspective for the future, but there are also many security risks. This is why UNHCR strongly opposes any forced return to that country. Yet you take away the most precious what Syrian refugees have, namely their security of residence, their protection. And What this is devastating for their health, for their well-being, and indeed also for the integration. You say it's going well with the integration of Syrians. You're playing with it now. Why doing so? And the result is only that the Syrians are seeking protection in other EU member states. Denmark is working under the Dublin system with other member states based on mutual trust and with respect for the Charter of Fundamental Rights. Yet, this also includes the right to asylum and non-refoulement. How are you reconciling this mutual trust and this working with other member states where you actually are shifting the responsibility for Syrian refugees to and your loyalty in terms of the treaty? Shouldn't you then be fair and withdraw from the cooperation under the Dublin system? Because now the member states are the victims, but of course the most biggest victims are the Syrian refugees. Regarding externalization, you say you uphold the right to asylum and access to an asylum procedure, but how? Is the processing in a third country in line with the European Convention on Human Rights Standards? Will you resettle the people who are granted protection or humanitarian protection? Is there any responsibility for returning the people who have been rejected after an effective remedy? And did you do any impact assessment on all the legal and practical implications? We know a large amount of feasibility studies that have been made and that are all very pessimistic. This is why the Commission has given up this whole idea. You say you want to contribute to responsibility worldwide. How are you doing that? Regarding resettlement, are you going to create legal avenues? And are you realizing that already 86% of the refugees are hosted by developing countries? Instead of giving them more money and resettling more people, you are creating a very expensive system to outsource the refugees and add more refugees to these countries. I mean, you use a lot of nice words, but the only goal is bringing back the number of asylum seekers to zero that come to Denmark. I think this marks a moral low point, and it's irresponsible for such a rich country. And I must say, really, it's really with a lot of regret I hear you paying lip service to the rule of law, to solidarity and social democratic values. But please be aware you have a responsibility to take your part in a responsibility. And let me say that Denmark is capable of doing so. Your society can do it.
Señor ministro, en este parlamento, puesto que usted ha hablado de...
Minister, you spoke about the decade-long debates and taking inspiration from having inspired others. Now, you will know that many members in this committee have been asking for fairer and more humane arrangements. Now, safe routes. We've been calling for this in this parliament time and again.
Thank you, Strick from the Greens. You're asking how are Denmark contributing? Let me start by saying that Denmark is one of the very, very few countries in the world that are living up to the UN standards on using 0.7% of our GDP on development assistance. And we are, in these years, using a larger proportion of that money on helping refugees. Our current budget in Denmark has prioritized a lot of more money on the organizations that are helping refugees in the world. So we are not fleeing from our responsibility. We are doing the quite opposite. We are trying to establish a refugee policy where we are, where we can help more people than we do today. And we are not, when we are saying zero asylum seekers, it doesn't mean zero refugees. It means that when people are coming to Europe, we think that they should come through the United Nations resettlement scheme and not through human smuggling. But that demands that we are insisting that if people are applying for asylum in Europe, they can have their case processed. And if they're in a need of protection, they will get protection, but not on European soil. The protection will be given outside of the European Union, because if we succeed in this, then why should people use human smugglers? Then we can have refugees coming to Europe in an orderly, controlled way and based on humanitarian criteria, and not who will succeed and who have the money to use human smuggling to come to Europe. You are asking a lot of, I think, good questions. For example, how can we make sure that the processing of the asylum applications outside of Europe is living up to the legal standards that Denmark is morally and also politically and legally bounded by. And that is why that it's not easy to establish such a mechanism. We'll have to be 100% sure that all the legal standards are met and is monitored by independent an independent monitoring mechanism. And let me also say that it's also important for me to say that Denmark is a country with a very, very strong legal tradition, and we are proud of that. 6 years in a row, we've been number one in the ranking of the best. Due to the rule of law index, Denmark is ranked as number one for 6 years in a row. And we are very proud of that, and we'll be number 7 and 8 years in a row as well. And this is also because that we have independent judicial bodies in Denmark, and the Refugee Appeals Board that have made those decisions that we are talking about has not, you know, I haven't called or text a judge. He's making his own decision based on the Danish legislation, where it's very clear that he has to live up to international standards, including the European Human Rights Convention. And because of that, you can be absolutely sure that there's no problem with transferring people in the Dublin system to Denmark. And I would also say I'm not experiencing any problems. We are transferring in and out of Denmark with our neighboring countries and with other European countries without any trouble.
Bien, por el grupo ID tiene la palabra.
Thank you. For the ID group, Peter Kofod has the floor.
Tak for det, formand, og jeg tillader mig at tale.
Thank you, Chairman. I would like to speak Danish. It would be weird for me to speak English to a Danish minister, since we can speak Danish with each other. Thank you, Minister, for showing up. I hope a lot of people in this setting will be inspired. What we do in Denmark, it's quite fantastic what we've done during several years. Denmark is a front runner when it comes to immigration. We are far beyond our neighboring countries, far ahead of many other European countries in this field, and we can be proud of that. What I have learned from this is that if the majority in this room were supposed to solve the big problems we have with immigration, if the majority were to solve it, then they would never be solved. The inhuman drownings in the Mediterranean would continue, human smuggling would continue, and we would help very few of the people in the country, in the world, that need help. We need to help more people spending the same resources. We need to protect our borders better, and we need to fight the organized crime that lives from smuggling people to Europe. I wish the Danish government good luck with the further process. I think it's great we have a social democrat government in Denmark who says very clearly that border fences are part of the solution. It is recognized that some of the things Hungary and Orbán did in 2015 was the right way forward. We recognize that. And, well, I also have a question here, finally. I would like to ask Mr. Tesfaye, the centers in third countries, I think it's a good idea. Is that the Australian model on European soil? That is, if you arrive at this center, you have an asylum treatment, and in the end, you do live up to the asylum demands. Will you then be moved to Europe, or will you remain in the center that the Danish government has created in a third country? I think that would be the best way. Of course, you should be able to stay there under good circumstances until the day that you can return to your home country, but that you should not go to Europe.
Thank you, Peter Kofod. I'll try to answer you in English, even though my English is not that good. And I'm glad that you are saying that you are hoping that other countries can be inspired by the Danish example. I'm inspired by other European countries each and every day, so I hope that we are inspired by each other, all of us. We have our differences. I know that we are a member of two different Danish political parties. From the Social Democratic government, it's extremely important for us, it's crucial for us to live up to our international standards and to uphold the values and the legal conditions in the European Human Rights Conventions and in the Geneva Convention. And I know that your party has some other views on that. But I'm glad that you are asking the questions on the Australian model, because the Australian model haven't been an inspiration for the Danish government. We think it had some serious problems, humanitarian problems on the islands that were a part of the Australian model. We are more inspired by the agreement made between the European Commission and the Turkish government back in 2016, I think it was, where there was also transfer mechanism between the Greek islands and Turkey. It's not exactly the same that we are proposing from the Danish government, but if I should point on something that has inspired us, it's the EU-Turkey agreement. And it also means that when people have applied for asylum and has been a part of that transfer mechanism and their application has been processed in a partner country outside of the European Union, the protection will also be given in that country and not in Denmark. But it doesn't mean that Denmark will not receive any refugees. It just means that the refugees will come to Denmark through the United Nations resettlement scheme and not through the spontaneous asylum seeking system. So it's not a no to refugees, but it's a way of trying to turn the tables around and establish a new system that hopefully, I hope so, can inspire others. And I also hope that this debate has made some, maybe removed some misunderstandings, but also maybe I hope that it's turned on some curiosity, because I sometimes think that when we're discussing migration issues, we are often, too often, just ending up in each corner discussing with each other.
Bien, pues por parte de la izquierda, la señora Malin Björk tiene la palabra.
Malin Björk now has the floor for the left.
Ah, perdón, el señor Procaccini va.
Mr. Procaccini, I do apologize, you're first.
Thank you. Minister?
No, please, sorry. It's your turn. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yes, please, let me speak. Let me speak in Italian, because I want to be very clear. Caro Ministro.
Dear Minister, what you have said today here is something we've been supporting for 2.5 years. Now, you're saying it from the left, we're saying it on the right. And for that reason, we've been insulted in all manner of ways. This meeting today is effectively the acme of hypocrisy of the left when it comes to immigration and the rule of law. And let me explain why. Fighting against illegal immigration and fighting to remove the causes of immigration and establishing hubs outside the EU to determine who has a right to asylum and who doesn't have the right to asylum in Europe. And let me add as well, fighting against the darker side of multiculturalism. These are the principles which, according to us, should inform immigration policy in Europe. And this not only to save the lives of migrants, but also to guarantee an ordered development of our European societies. I'm sorry to have to say this, but as I said, not only have you today very clearly presented what the EU should be doing in immigration, but also with respect to the rule of law, please allow me to say this, allow me, colleagues, to say this, that if your government had been a centre-right government, the approach of your government would have been considered an infringement of the rule of law. But given that your government is a left-wing government, a social democrat government, this isn't the case. This isn't happening. Now, today, quite frankly, I don't need to ask you anything. I just want to thank you for your intellectual honesty, for your political honesty, because today maybe you've been able to build a bridge between two visions, a right-wing and a left-wing vision, that should be engaged in dialogue rather than fighting against one another.
Como vamos muy mal de tiempo,
We are a bit short of time, so you have no precise question, so let's move straight on to the last person who's going to ask a question, Malin Björk for the left.
Thank you. Minister, I'm from Sweden, and we have long-standing Nordic cooperation. We have shared understanding on many issues, something that's valued by myself and most Swedes. But if there is one area where it would be a nightmare to approximate with Denmark, it is in the field of asylum and migration. And contrary to what you've said, the Australian model is very, very close to what you're proposing. It has been tried, and it's a brutal failure. Denmark, as was pointed out by one of my colleagues here, is one of the most prosperous, richest countries in the EU. And that you would be driving this narrative of not being able to welcome people in need of protection, and trying in doing so also to undermine human rights conventions, is an aberration. So my question is that 85% of asylum seekers and refugees are in developing countries. What if major hosting developing countries adopted the same stance? It would mean the end to the right to leave one's country and the right to seek asylum. And you have opted out from this field of cooperation in the EU policy, but you have opted into Dublin. And if Dublin transfers actually mean that you are sending people into other third countries, then I think the very basis of mutual trust is broken. And I would be very surprised if Denmark could stay in the Dublin cooperation. Denmark would have to be kicked out. And if I would also address the issue of the withdrawal of protection station of Syrians, it's the same there. Transfers of Syrians to Denmark, does it mean that they will up in Kigali or will they end up in Copenhagen? I think that is a breach of mutual trust and the functioning of the Dublin system. I would just finally say, please, Denmark, Social Democrats in Denmark, other progressive forces, get back in the game. Choose Nordic cooperation. Choose human rights, European human rights and international commitments. Don't choose Visegrad Club.
Minister, the response, please.
To the left and to Sweden, thank you for the comment and the questions. Let me start by saying that one of the countries that we have most Dublin transfers to is actually, of course, our neighboring country, Sweden, and this is working quite well, unbureaucratic. I know that there's a lot of people arguing that the Dublin system is broken and failed and isn't working. That's I can see it's not working perfectly, but seen from a Danish perspective, we think it's absolutely crucial that we have the Dublin system, and it's more or less working, I would say. Maybe I should also say that the Swedish migration service called Migrationsverket have also rejected asylum applications from Syrians. The Danish authorities aren't the only ones that have the judgment that have decided to reject asylum applications from some Syrians. I know that in Sweden as well as in Denmark, the vast majority of people applying from asylum from Sweden is getting an asylum application, but it's not 100%. And to the rest of what you're saying, it sounded for me more as a speech. We don't consider ourselves in Denmark to be a part of a Visegrad club. Some of our closest allies are the other European countries with border control: Sweden, Germany, Austria, Holland, France. Good countries that we have close cooperation with. But it's not like we don't want to discuss anything with Poland. I've visited my colleague in Lithuania, and I think she's doing a good job on the border to Belarus. So I also think it's important for us in Europe not to divide our country in east and west and north and south, but try to listen very carefully to each other with curiosity and interest. What are the arguments? Mr. Procaccini, I know you're from the right. I'm from the left. I'm a trade unionist. I'm a socialist. I mean, from a socialist family, I'm a proud member of the socialist movement in Denmark. But I'm listening to what you're saying, and I don't think that Europe can solve our problems if we start just by digging the trenches between us deeper and moving in each corner and just making some speeches to each other. It won't solve anything. We have to listen to each other. And in Denmark, we had a centre-right government before our last elections. We supported most of their legislation on these matters. And right now, most of the proposals I'm presenting is supported by the former government. And I think this is working. We can't get 100% what we want, but it's a broad majority in the Danish parliament supporting our politics. And I think that's the right way forward for Europe, listening to each other, and listening very carefully. And I have been listening to you today, and it's been good also for me to hear what the different opinions in the Libe Committee is.
Okay, thank you very much for all your intervention, Minister, dear colleagues, and Minister, thank you for your presence here with us today. And we will continue with our session, and I must announce that there is not interpretation system anymore, and we will continue. Thank you very much.
Hermed slut på Europaparlamentets høring af den danske udlændinge- og integrationsminister Mattias Tesfaye den 13. januar 2022. Man kan også høre udsendelsen her som podcast på Flygtninge og Freds hjemmeside flygtningeogfred.dk, som også kan tilgås fra mobilens podcast-app eller på YouTube. Man søger bare på Flygtninge og Fred. På flygtningeogfred.dk kan man også kommentere eller abonnere på Flygtninge og Fred eller høre andre relevante udsendelser.